Blog Talk Radio.
Much less detail the podcast on a Friday night, November 21st, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. The beginning of NFL week number 12 occurred last night, getting me a quick victory over Jason to start the week. I'm obviously very happy about that. That puts us, for the moment, in a tie for the season. I finally caught up to Jason after a season or half a season of chasing, and we can only wait and see what happens in week 12 as we get ready to make our picks for this week and see who's going to come out on top after Sunday and Monday. So, Jason, I'm finally catching up. I'm on your heels, and I'm finally neck and neck. And it took a lot of work, but I finally made it.
Yeah, I take it as an enormous compliment that all your hard work, all of your struggles, all of your stats, just to be as good as I am.
You know,
I've never heard someone so happy to be tied in the standings. But you've earned it.
Yo, Adrian!
If I tell you that you've done a good job, that just means it's just as good as the job I've done. So. Good job.
Yeah, there's plenty of cartoons that we saw as kids growing up that gave us that sort of image of trying to learn that lesson of sometimes you can work your behind off and sometimes it just doesn't matter. You know, the rabbit running as fast as he can, the Bugs Bunny rabbit trying to win that race and just busting ass and hustling and breaking the sweat and just wearing himself out, and the turtle just doop dee doop doop. Just loping right along.
Does that make me the turtle in this analogy?
Yeah, because it seems like there's 20 of you. I pass you up and I look back and I'm sticking my tongue out. And I'm past you and I look ahead and there's another one.
I got to say, you've been working hard. I know you've been working hard on your picks. There are weeks that I call you 15 minutes before the show and you're not ready because you're still working on your last few picks. So I know how much you put into this. I feel bad that I don't, but it's just, I can't change. It's 25 years of the way I've been doing this. I think if I worked hard on, I would go crazy. Because I think the stats would confuse me, because a lot of it is the sight test. And last week was a weird week. Last night was weird. Just a ugly, strange, in the rain, that Kansas City-Oakland game. Oakland, you know, my theory worked against me, because my theory is always about the team that gets its one primetime game.
That was
They showed up. They're going to go right back in the shitter, almost guaranteed.
That was indeed their Super Bowl, and you could tell, too. The veterans were fired up. The young guys were fired up. Everybody on that team was fired up and just clicking on all cylinders and playing their asses off and just showing out as hard as they could, just balling out. All of that, and they still found themselves losing in the fourth quarter, but they managed to pull out the win.
Yeah, you know, Kansas City managed to give me some hope after I figured there'd be no chance I could win that pick. They managed to get up four with a decent chunk of time left in the game. So I'm thinking, I've been saved by pick sixes before or stupid turnovers, so it very easily... If Oakland had played the way we've expected them to play, that one for a game that for 3.5 quarters was completely in your column, the Chiefs had to go and tease me, you know, just enough to keep in. Yeah, you were talking about the exuberance of the Raiders. There was a play where two of the Raiders were so excited to be playing well. They're 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage celebrating while the Chiefs are about to snap the ball. That tells you they were not ready for prime time, or and basically weigh it, you know, far exceeding
their
reach.
That's not how
reach.
Professional teams do it, you mean?
Exactly. That's not, I mean, when you're 0-9 or 0-10, okay, I guess you can have that one. They won the game, right?
Yeah, after all of that. Now, they would have lost that game on maybe that very play if Kansas City could have snapped the ball and got it off.
Oh, man, if they could have quick-snapped that, oh, man.
Had Oakland not had the sense to call timeout from the sideline and stop that silliness, yeah.
So, yes, one game into Week 12, and you and I are right back where we started this thing, dead even. We have 5 weeks and then the playoffs start. That's what it's, I mean, that's really what it's about now, these next, you know, 70, 80 games.
Right, I never officially caught you last year, but I made another rally like this in the middle of the season. And then you ran off like an 8-game streak over me in the last 2 weeks of the regular
season.
Yeah,
there were
put
two
it into
times,
distance.
There were two times last year you got to within 3 games of me. And it's funny that I'm kind of giving you a little crap about being so excited about being tied with me. I will say, on the record, you were much more excited last year about getting to those 3 games behind me because you were so far behind.
Yeah.
That getting to 3 was just like, you know, I kept joking that you were expending all your energy just to get, well, and then after the last time you got to 3 games behind me, you gave up 13 games to me over the next four or 5 weeks of the season. So I can only hope that's what's going to happen again.
Oh, it would crush me if it did, but it very well might.
Yeah,
you
odds are pretty
know.
Slim you'll be 16 games behind me by the time we go into the playoffs. Pretty slim.
That game was funny to watch last night because Oakland just, they were celebrating the way I celebrated last year. When they did anything, they were just jumping up and down and screaming and trying to get the crowd all pumped up. And it was truly their Super Bowl. And then it was almost as funny but sad because I had Oakland to watch them slowly lose that lead that they had built up as the better team. Yeah, exactly. As the better team eventually took over and did what they were supposed to do. But, hey, give Oakland credit for settling themselves. And once they lost the lead, they sure didn't give up. I mean, I think the big key was the running attack. I pointed that out as a key before the game that Latavius Murray was ready to take over that starting role. And I think he kind of proved me right on that one. That's one of my better ones of all time right there. Not only did I say that on the podcast, but I backed it up by picking him up in our fantasy league and knocking out a quick 24 points before the weekend even got here.
Wow, glad I'm not playing you this week.
But then he gets knocked out. He gets KTFO'd with the Rock'em Sock'em hit to the head that popped his jaw up and knocked him out with a concussion. So Oakland and Tony Sparano back to settling for Darren McFadden and Maurice Jones-Drew in the running game, and predictably they go nowhere, and Kansas City rallies back, takes the lead because Oakland's one-dimensional again. Well, they made the key decision basically as important and key a choice as putting Latavius Murray in the game. They decided to yank both of those ancient running backs to replace him and put in ancient fullback Marcel Reese, who doesn't have many moves, but he has this one move. It's called hit the hole as hard as you fucking can. And that's exactly what he did, and that's what gave Oakland the momentum on their final drive, is they actually had a run game to support the passing attack, and they made it all the way downfield and got the James Jones wide-open touchdown on a beautiful pump fake left by Derek Carr. Gives Oakland the lead. The defense finally holds after getting the sack and celebrating, like you said, 20 yards behind the play after a third-down sack. Hello,
yes.
It's fourth down. Kansas City's going for it because they have no choice. You might want to get back on sides. Kansas City was ready to snap the ball. They were still 15 yards behind the play. There was no way they were going to get back in time before the offside penalty, which would have given Kansas City a free play, and Alex Smith could have thrown it up into the end zone with no repercussions whatsoever, except Oakland was smart enough to call a timeout before any of that ever occurred, so they were able to get set for the fourth down stop, which they subsequently got. So, yeah, just an unusual evening in Oakland, but you kind of had the feeling, at least I had the feeling, it was going to be one of those type of nights. You got a winless team. It's a division rivalry, the desperate winless. Yeah, it all played in. Like you said, it's a scenario you've seen many times before, and usually you go with it, but not last night. And thankfully, I'll take the victory over that. So we are going to get started on week 12 with our first highlight game. This is a Jason special here. He wanted to spotlight his favorite team, the first place, they're 4-6, the first place Atlanta
first
Falcons.
First place.
The 4-6 Falcons hosting the 6-4 Cleveland Browns, a team that's got a quarterback controversy ready to brew every single time their starter, Brian Hoyer, throws a ball somewhat off target. Doesn't have to be completely into the other team's backfield. It just has to be a little off target, and here come the Johnny Football chants. So anyway, Cleveland on the road down in the dome, in the Georgia Dome, in Atlanta. Atlanta is they're the favorite. They're the home team. They're the division leader, so I guess maybe that makes a little sense. They're the cop-out 3-point home favorite against the Browns. Jason, what's your pick?
Yeah, a lot of faith there for that home first-place team there, given those three.
Woo. As bad as Atlanta's looked this year at times, they're lucky they're favorite at all.
I'll tell you what, I'm shocked that they are giving that many. This seems like a big line to me. I'm going with the Cleveland Browns in this game. They're getting their stud wide receiver back in Josh Gordon, and you could not ask for a softer landing than this one for him. This Atlanta secondary, and this is already a bad secondary for the Falcons, and now they're missing Robert Alford, one of their better corners, although saying better and corner with that secondary isn't really saying much. So you've got a bad secondary that's got some injury issues. The Atlanta offense is banged up. A lot of questionable receivers. Douglas is questionable. Hester might not play. Antoine Smith, their most explosive playmaker on offense, is done. So I'm not too excited about the prospects here for the Falcons to win this game. Also, Falcons this year, 4-0 against NFC South opponents, 0-6 against everybody else. I'm playing the odds on this one. Give me the Brown fever.
Oh, man, I think you took all of my points. Yeah, I got the Brown fever as well. I got Josh Gordon getting back on the field on that fast track down in Atlanta. Could be a big explosion for him, his first game back this season, especially getting receptions going his way because, again, Jordan Cameron, the star tight end for the Browns, will not be available because of his concussion issues. Yeah, exactly. 4-0 in the division for Atlanta and 0-6 against anyone not in the NFC South. That does not bode well for the Falcons. Even though they're at home, they're obviously a much better team at home than on the road. But even though they're at home, I still got a bad feeling that they're not going to be able to hold down Brian Hoyer and Josh Gordon because that defense is just atrocious. 32nd dead last in pass defense. They're giving up 8.2 yards per pass attempt. They get no pass rush. They're giving up 4.0 yards per carry, which is incredibly good for them. That's stunning. I thought it would be much higher than that. But Cleveland will probably get some yardage on the ground as well because they're on that track. Again, that track, a lot of teams that come in seem to make some noise in Atlanta because they're not used to playing on such a fast turf. So I think it might be a week to go find Isaiah Crowell on your waiver wire for you fantasy geeks and pick him up. I think he might have a big game along with Josh Gordon and Brian Hoyer. But, Atlanta's offense just has not overcome, for the most part, the messes that their defense has left on the field for them. Matty Ice has been hot and cold so far this year. The run game has been on and off. Steven Jackson has looked really good at times and found the fountain of youth, and other times has looked every bit his age and his miles in the NFL. I don't think he's going to have a huge game in this one, but I think he might be a factor. But overall, it just feels like one of those games where Cleveland finds the last touchdown at the end of the game and pulls it out by three. Maybe last team with the ball wins. But yeah, I'm with you. I got to go with the Brown Fever. I got to make Atlanta proven until they beat a team that's not in their division. You got to look at them with a kind of a skeptical eye. So I'm going to go ahead with you and take the Cleveland Browns one more time, even though I got a feeling, again, the next bad game Brian Hoyer has, it might be time for some Johnny Football, unfortunately.
Oh, I have to agree with you on that one, because if it's this game against a bad Atlanta team,
he's supposed to perform, yeah.
Yeah, and they've already kind of shit the bed here against a couple of bad teams. They're sort of winning the games they should lose and losing the games they should win. That's not the kind of consistency that you want. This is, even though Atlanta's a favorite here, I don't really look at them as the favorite, because I think we both understand that Cleveland is a better team than Atlanta is. So I really look at Cleveland as being the team that should win this game.
But again, Cleveland is the better team than Atlanta. Exactly what is that saying?
They're both shit.
Let's get to two division winners who have earned their spots. The Detroit Lions tied with the Packers atop the NFC North. They are 7-3. The New England Patriots running away with the AFC East. But I thought Brady was done. I thought Janine Garoppolo was about to take over as quarterback. What happened to that? New England 8-2. They're 5-0 at home. They've been just killing people. Detroit brings their number one defense in the league into Foxborough, Massachusetts. Hello, Detroit Lions, number one defense in the league. Meet Tom Brady. How's that going to go for you? I don't think it's going to go well. New England is a 7-point favorite at home. It's not enough. I think New England's going to keep romping. I think they're going to beat Detroit by a couple of touchdowns. There's a couple of individual matchups inside of there that interest me. Are the New England Patriots going to put Darrelle Revis one-on-one on Megatron? Are they going to have him follow Calvin Johnson around the field, or are they going to try to zone him up like they did with Indianapolis? They put Revis on Reggie Wayne, but only after Reggie Wayne had started out the game pretty hot. So we'll see if they're going to start out trying to play a little zone and play keep away from Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate, or if one of them is going to get hot enough where they're going to have to just say, okay, Darrell, go get them and stick them one-on-one and try to keep a zone defense on the other guy and try to split the field that way. So I'm keeping an eye on that, and I want to see what this Detroit number one defense does against Tom Brady and the New England passing attack. Which wasn't needed last week against the Indianapolis Colts, because Jonas Gray was running crazy all over the Colts. Really, Brandon LaFell and Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman, all those guys, they weren't really needed against the Colts. They used Gronkowski at the end. They used the machine, the man is not human, I'm telling you, Rob Gronkowski, to sort of put it away at the end. I think this is going to be a different attack. I think New England was smart enough to take advantage of Indy being such a terrible run defense, and they were able to just keep running and make Indy stop them on the ground, and Indy never did. And this is going to be a different approach, because Detroit can stop Jonas Gray and LeGarrette Blount and whoever else wants to run for New England on the ground. So I think this is going to be on Tom Brady once again to get it done through the air. And I honestly don't see why he wouldn't accomplish that. He's been so hot lately. He's going to go for another 300 yards. It's at home again. They're 5-0 at home and just flourishing and romping over everybody that comes in. This is funny. Jonas Gray, if you haven't seen the latest news, was sent home today from practice because he showed up late. He apparently overslept. That's his story anyway. Jonas Gray, breakout star, the man that everyone now loves, and he just overslept and was late to a practice on Bill Belichick's watch. Everybody say it with me. Oh, fuck. Would anyone be surprised if Jonas Gray got like one carry on Sunday and Stephen Ridley and LeGarrette Blount did all the heavy lifting? This is how it works under Bill Belichick, under the evil empire. You get one chance to royally fuck up, and if you do, you might not see the ball again. You might not see the field again. Jonas Gray might get cut before the weekend's over, because that's how vindictive Bill Belichick can be. It was Shane Vereen is the other running back now. Stephen Ridley's out for the year. But yeah, it doesn't matter. Either way, I think New England's going to put the weapons together to beat the Lions and once again establish their dominance over someone and show that they're not in their class. They showed the Colts last week that you're not in our class yet. I think they're going to do the same to the Lions.
Well, here we go again. I concur. We just agree so much these. This is the way you've been able to catch up to me, because you don't have to worry. You only have to win one game or two games a week on me now. We'll see how the rest of the show goes, but yeah, here we go. Same reasons. You got a bad time for the Lions to catch the Patriots. A bad time for anybody, because they're just so hot. And you know, we were worried that the bye was going to screw them up. Well, that didn't happen.
Nope.
You know, so in the Lions, everyone talks about the awesomeness of the Lions' defense. Their offense, which is normally a high-powered offense, has been pretty putrid. 18.8 points per game? That's not going to get it done going up to Foxborough. Not at all. New England doesn't have the best defense in the league, but it's not garbage. They have an exceptionally high-efficiency offense right now. It is amazing. We were talking about this. They don't need to go deep down the field. They just find a lot of ways to get guys within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage and just keep this thing moving. And then to add the added element of a running game, or like I always say with Green Bay, the threat of a running game,
yeah,
just means that The Lions had to waste time in the film room this week scheming for something they might not even see. Tom Brady might throw the ball 72 times, because that's just the way it goes. It's just the way when you think they're going to do one thing, they do the other. And when you think that, they go back to what you thought they were going to do in the first place. They're always out scheming, and they're always they're adjusting to the adjustments. I mean, they're a very good team. As bad as they looked early is as good as they look now. So I guess I was wrong about the longevity or the legs that the Patriots would have with this turnaround, because they're sustaining it. And I don't see the Lions going in there and putting up much of a fight. I think it's going to be a pretty ugly game overall. I just don't think that the Lions have the horses to go into Foxborough and compete with this team right now.
Yeah, we are concurring a lot on this. Detroit is the team we should be, you know, one of the two teams that we should be afraid of going against, the other being Arizona, that every time we think they're going to falter and fall back, they just seem to find a way to rally now. If they pull out a rally in this one, that'll really open my eyes. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, that would speak volumes to the... Oh, sorry, you whistled me. You cut me off. Oh, no. No, it would definitely speak volumes to how legitimate the Lions are in the NFC if they can go into Foxborough and deliver this one. But I don't see it happening.
Speaking of those Cardinals, they are once again being doubted and hated on. They are 9-1. They will not stop. and yet we still don't believe in them as a public, as a betting public at least. Arizona, now with Carson Palmer on the shelf, now with Drew Stanton behind center. I said last week this would be yet another huge test for them. They've passed pretty much everyone so far this year. Now they go to the toughest facility in the NFL, CenturyLink Field, home of the world champion Seattle Seahawks, at 6-4, coming off of that tough loss in Kansas City. They're back home. They might be a little mad. They might be ready to avenge Arizona's beating of them last year. We'll see how it all works out. But here's what the betting public thinks of 9-1 Arizona. They get 7.5 points at the 6-4 Seahawks. Jason, who you got?
Yeah, you got to love the – I mean, some of the – we always love it when the lines just look strange. And this is one of those, the line looks weird because you've got Seattle. Yeah, they're really good at home, but they're the team, you know, they're the team that's chasing Arizona. But somehow, some way, maybe it's the 12th man mystique, how good Seattle is at home, or what you would tend to think it is, the fact that they think that the other shoe is going to drop here for the Arizona Cardinals at some point because Carson Palmer's not there, and you're leaning on Drew Stanton in a non-existent running game to roll into Seattle and beat the defending champs. I hate to say it this week, but I'm with the odds makers. I'm with Seattle. I'm going to give 7.5. I like the angle for the Seahawks that, yeah, they're the big favorite, but I think they've got a goal. I think that, you know, this needs to be the game that sort of wakes them up from that Super Bowl hangover. They have not looked like the Seahawks that we saw last year at all this year. And if they're going to do it, this is the game they got to do it. Because if they can't get up for this game, where you still have an outside chance, very outside chance, you have an outside chance of catching the Cardinals. If you lose this game, you have no chance of catching the Cardinals. And the only way Seattle is going to defend their title is if their games are all played at home, or most of their games are played at home, because they're not going to Green Bay. You know, they're not going to Philadelphia. Their odds are not good if they have to go somewhere, play in awful cold winter weather, and try to contend for a title. So they have to win this game. If you're going to get up, you get up for this game and this game alone. The last time we saw Drew Stanton in a big spot on the road, it was in Denver, and that game ended up getting out of control. In fact, he didn't even finish that game. Another guy had to come, who I have no idea who he is, but another guy had to come in and finish that game because Denver just started putting the whooping on him in the fourth quarter. I think Seattle... I have no stats for this because they have not looked very good. They've played some pretty dreadful ball for what we come to expect from them out of last season. But I think if they're going to do it, this is the spot. It's just a gut feeling. Give me the Seahawks.
All right, get ready for it. I concur.
Wow.
Now, I'm the one that should be expected to take the Seahawks in this situation, because I've been the one saying all year, eventually this magic fucking pixie dust that the Cardinals have has got to wear off. So here I am again. Yeah, it's a huge number for any 9-1 team. I can't explain it. Seattle just losing, not looking very good. They've been sort of in turmoil basically since the Percy Harvin trade. That's when all the rumors and innuendos started flying about, you know, different opinions of different guys on the team, that Marshawn Lynch is a moody son of a bitch that nobody seems to like, that some people think, you know, Russell Wilson is not black enough, whatever the fuck that means. It's been a rough month or last month or so for the world champions. And I'm with you. I think this is the spot to bounce back, because they're going to want to be at their best. They're going to want to show Arizona that you can't just take the division that quickly after we dominate the NFL and win the Super Bowl. You can't have it quite that easily. You can't go running off 9-1 and then come in our house and beat us and go 10-1. Seattle is probably, most people are probably picking them anyway straight up, but then to give the 7.5, that's a pretty big statement. That's a pretty bold statement to make. That's a bold statement also to give to any team that's having the trouble throwing the football that Seattle is having. I don't think there's any doubt that Drew Stanton is going to outthrow Russell Wilson on Sunday by probably a lot. And I'm still taking Seattle to cover the number because I think they're going to use that running attack. I think they're going to use beast mode and Russell Wilson and Christine Michael and whoever else wants to run for them. I think Arizona's stout number three rush defense is going to get a workout because I don't think they've faced any team that is as committed to the run as the Seattle Seahawks are. Now, whether that's because they have to be, you know, by force, because they don't have a passing game, that's besides the point. The point is Seattle is committed to running the football. They will run and keep running and keep running. And eventually I think they're going to break through just like they do with pretty much every other team that they play. But I think they're especially motivated to break through against the Cardinals, again, because they came in and beat them in the house last year and because they want to show Arizona, hey, you may be all high and mighty right now. You think you're the big dog in the NFC West, but we still got some bite left in us, and I think they're going to come out and show that. And then a couple of injury notes that are dating towards Seattle and away from Arizona. Larry Fitzgerald for Arizona hasn't practiced all week long. Doesn't look very good for him to take the field on Sunday. Looks like a game-time decision. If my memory recalls correctly, I think he did not. He was a game-time decision in this very same game last year and wound up not playing, and I believe that was a contingency pick on my part that, hey, if Larry Fitzgerald isn't out there, Arizona doesn't have a chance, so I'll take Seattle, and they wound up beating him straight up anyway. I think Seattle is going to be ready this time. I don't think they're going to let that happen 2 years in a row. And then on Seattle's end, their stud linebacker, Bobby Wagner, looks like he's ready to finally return from his toe injury. And if Arizona was feeling bad about not being able to run the ball themselves, I think they're going to feel even worse when Bobby Wagner's out there. They might run for 50 yards as a team, and I might be being generous giving them that much. Yeah, I'm with you. I guess Seattle to pretty much give them a squish and put a strong defensive performance together and sort of reestablish their dominance in the NFL.
It's kumbaya today.
Well, let's see what we have to say on our fourth highlight game. It's the Miami Dolphins and the Denver Broncos. Miami at 6-4, Denver at 7-3, but 5-0 at home. So with that in mind, the betting public going with the Broncos, they're getting 7 points at home against the Fighting Fish. I've been a little bit of a Dolphins advocate over the last month and a half, ever since I was able to get the entire game film and watch them against Green Bay in a game that, ironically, they lost. But they looked so physically painful to play against in that game that I've sort of been a fan of theirs ever since. And it, no matter what, whether you win or lose, you know you've played against the Miami Dolphins because they leave an impression. The front seven beats you up, and then the cornerbacks like to take their little digs and cheap shots on you as well. Brent Grimes has been playing the hell out of it at cornerback for Miami, and Courtland Finnegan on the other side has been, like I said, getting his little shots in here and there. He's not the athlete he used to be, so he kind of has to play that way. But Brent Grimes, the difference is he still looks like he's on top of his game. He has just been balling out. And for him to possibly take away Demaryius Thomas, leaving Emmanuel Sanders as Peyton Manning's main target, call me crazy, but I don't like the fact that after that huge hit Sanders took last Sunday in Denver's loss to St. Louis, that he's already been so gleefully, eagerly cleared through the concussion protocol and ready to take the field for the Broncos on Sunday. I was under the impression that he was going to be questionable, game-time decision, maybe leaning towards not playing just because of the ferocity of the hit. And here he is listed as probable on the injury report, and apparently all signs point to him being ready to go. I got a bad feeling about this. Miami is the type of team to lay another lick on him like that and put him in another concussion, put him in another dark room. Him and Wes Welker might have conjoining dark rooms together if the Dolphins have their way. I'm going to take Miami to spring the upset and go into Denver and get a win. I know Miami's running back Lamar Miller has been impressive in the zone blocking attack for Miami this year. I know he's a little beat up, but I still think he's going to play a big role in keeping the ball moving down the field for the Dolphins, setting up Ryan Tannehill being able to make the big play here and there. He's not going to go toe-to-toe with Peyton Manning. Peyton's still going to out-throw Ryan Tannehill, but I think Tannehill will make just enough big plays to keep Miami around and sneak out a late victory over the Broncos. I think Peyton Manning and the Broncos have been a little exposed the last couple of weeks. If you get after the Broncos offensive line, Peyton's been getting beat around, and I think that's going to continue. I think there's a few teams that have D-lines and front sevens that you don't want to play when your offensive line is injured and struggling, and this is one of them. You don't want to play the Dolphins when your offensive line is injured and struggling. In addition, Julius Thomas, the tight end, is a game-time decision for Denver. He might not be out there. There's only so much Jacob Tammy can do for you in substitution for Julius Thomas. It's not really a fair substitution. Miami's on 10 days rest. They're going to be gunning for Peyton Manning. I think he's going to get sacked and beat around some more, and I think Miami's going to pull off a pretty major upset in the Mile High City.
That would be a major upset, and I might have gone along with you. I have the Broncos here, so we finally disagree. Sign the alarm. No, I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos. Had the result not gone the way it went last week, had the Broncos not looked so bad in losing that game at St. Louis, consequently also the end of a three-game road trip for the Broncos, so now they actually get to come back home. They get to sleep in their beds, eat the home cooking. They get to welcome the Dolphins in after basically getting embarrassed by the St. Louis Rams, only putting up 7 points. I understand that Miami can get after the quarterback. I mean, on defense, very similar to the way St. Louis is able to play. You know, stout up front. Get after the quarterback. Let's all meet at Peyton Manning because we know where he's going to be. But I've got a feeling I just don't want to sell short. This is your boy. I don't want to sell short on Peyton Manning coming off of an ugly, ugly loss at St. Louis. Miami's a good team. I will definitely give them that. I think you like Miami a little bit more than I do. I haven't been as impressed with Miami as you have, although I do give up. You know, I will give you that they are a good team, but there's still a lot of question marks with me about Miami, and I don't think this is a good spot for them. Had Denver rolled up St. Louis last week like they should have, maybe come into this game feeling a little overconfident, I think that would have been a little more ripe for Miami to come in there and spring the upset. But sometimes after an ugly loss, that kind of gets that focus going. They've got a real purpose this week, and it's not to have that happen again. We saw that with Cincinnati after Cincinnati got so thoroughly embarrassed on a Thursday night? Remember, everyone was like, oh, they're done? You know, these guys are terrible. Andy Dalton's shit. And what happens? Everything gets into focus. They go to New Orleans, and they spring a big upset. I'm looking for a very focused, efficient effort from the Broncos. Good on defense. Their defense has been, they show some flashes, and then they go back and forth. I'm still not sold on this. Let's just buy all the defensive players and throw them together, and it's going to work. Every week's a little different for them, but I think this week they get it done. Miami doesn't really scare him. Anybody on offense, they're all of their, I mean, all of their talent is on that defensive line and getting after the quarterback. If they can keep Peyton Manning upright, I think this is an easy win for the Broncos.
Well, we definitely got to pay attention to this game because the way we've been picking, that might be the only game we're different on this week.
It might be.
All right. On to the rest of Week 12 and even more less detail. Is this nine games we're sifting through here? Or 10 games, actually, we have left on the docket. So.
Yeah, 20 minutes for nine games?
We've done worse before.
That's right. We used to do 10 games in 8 minutes.
The 2-8 Tennessee Titans take their rookie quarterback, Zach Mittenberger, on the road to Philadelphia with total fraud Mark Sanchez. He is a big 11-point home favorite. The Philadelphia Eagles minus 11 hosting the Titans.
And if all the games are like this, it won't take very long. I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. You cannot hold them responsible for what Green Bay did to them, because Green Bay has been rolling up just about everybody. They're not quite the caliber of offense that they're going to face this week. I like the Eagles to run all over the place and do the Chip Kelly thing, and the Titans, it's not going to work. So I'm going to give them all Eagles squish.
I'm going to take those big points, actually, because I was shocked to see Mettenberger have deep ball success against the Steelers last week.
The Steelers didn't cover anybody.
The Steelers' defense is less than impressive, but nonetheless, you let Nate Washington run a double move on you and beat you for a touchdown. That's kind of scary, but nonetheless, a lot of quarterbacks would have missed the wide open man. They would have been so excited to see him break open like that, they would have just missed him. At least Mettenberg was able to lay that in. And combine that with tight end Delanie Walker returning from his concussion, which is a very big weapon for Tennessee. When you're talking about a team that doesn't know how to throw very well, that tight end in the middle of the field is a huge weapon. I think that might be enough to cover the number on total fraud, so I'm going to take the 11 points there. The Green Bay Packers, as hot as any team still in football, Aaron Rodgers, just keep on relaxing. Give up 7.5 points on the road at the 4-6 Minnesota Vikings.
I struggled with this one more than any other one, believe it or not, of this week. I really struggled with this. I'm taking the points in this one. I'm taking the Minnesota Vikings at home. Potentially some sloppy weather in play in this game. The Packers have been riding so high. What says let down more than anything? On the road at a division rival that's not as bad as everybody thinks they are. I like the Vikings to keep this one close, possibly even have a lead late, and then the Packers gut this one out at the end. Kind of wake up.
You have said that before, that you think the Vikings are better than they look on the screen. I do not concur. We're definitely going to be different on this one as well. I got the Packers squish. I remember that Week 5 Thursday night debacle up in Lambeau when they beat the Vikings 42-10, and it wasn't that close. And I think this is going to be more of the same. Just that simple. This might be another squish, the biggest spread on the board this week. The Jacksonville Jaguars are off their bye. They're back from England. They are 1-9, and they are on the road and getting 14 points at the 6-4 Indianapolis Colts.
Yep. You know what? It's not enough. This is a bad week to catch the Colts, by the way. The Colts just got to be embarrassed by the Patriots. So guess what? They get to take out all their frustrations on the Jacksonville Jaguars and Blake Bortles. Nice try, guys. They got their one, right? Like the Raiders, they promptly went back in the shitter. Here we go. Colts get right. Colts squish.
Completely concur for the same reason that Indy coming off of that New England win is going to be a little mad. And Andrew Luck mad. I think that might get really ugly really quick against Jacksonville. The one thing of interest that I want to keep my eye on is who the hell is going to run the ball for Indianapolis. Now that Ahmad Bradshaw is out for the year, you can't rely on Trent Richardson. Someone's got to come from the Netherlands or from the ether or from somewhere to be an effective runner for Indianapolis. Because if not, it's going to be Andrew Luck throwing more, which might be great for his fantasy owners, but might get him worn out after a while. So that's just something to keep an eye on, is if somebody emerges as a decent runner for the Colts. They're going to have a lot of downtime to run the ball in the second half in this one, I would think. So we'll see if something happens there.
Yeah. I'll give you one guess at who the leading rusher is going to be for the Colts this week.
But Andrew Luck?
Ding, 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 ding. Correct.
Lord, if that happens. That is not a recipe for success in the long run, but it may well happen.
Won't matter against the Jags.
The 6-3-1 Cincinnati Bengals, here's your Heckle and Jide team. I call them Heckle and Jide as a tribute to Dan Hampton, who used that term once upon a time, many moons ago. The 6-3-1 Bengals are not loved by the betting public. They are 2-point underdogs at the 5-5 Houston Texans.
Yeah, I want to give you here something to look at for the Bengals and not look at with much pride. The last six times they've played the Houston Texans, 0-6 against the spread. I've got the Texans to cover that number. I know, cover the 2. We talk about the Heckle and Jide Bengals. Perfect spot for them not to show up. Also, anytime you go up against a team, it's got J.J. Watt on defense. He's going to wreak some havoc. Andy Dalton's going to be worried about him all day long. I think Dalton has a lousy game here to win this one.
There are a few games that I did not have confidence in, or that I did not know just looking at the matchup who I wanted, at least straight up, that I actually had to think about an alternative way to look at the game. For this week and for only a handful of games, I am enlisting your favorite, usually your favorite stat, the season point differential. Who's doing better? Who's got more points than the opposition? Who's got a better plus minus on the season? And this one made my pick easy to make because I was stunned to look at the stats and see that the 6-3-1 Bengals are only +3 on the entire season. They are three games over 500 and only a +3 on the season. And the 5-5 Houston Texans are +25.
That's great either.
It's a hell of a lot better than +3. So, yes, give me more Alfred Blue. Give me more Ryan Mallett. Give me more J.J. Watt. Give me also the Houston Texans. It's the Lovey Bowl. The 2-8 Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Lovie Smith. And, for that matter, Jake McCrown. Don't forget him. He's also returning. Returning to Soldier Field to face my beloved Chicago Bears. But hey, they got the win last week, so maybe they've turned it around. I don't know. The 2-8 Bucks +5.5 at the 4-6 Bears.
There's no way in hell I'm taking the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in this game. On the road in a really lousy place to play. I mean, the Bears, I really think you're so low on the Bears. I don't know why. They're bad. But they're not
Tampa
bad. Gave
up 52 weeks in a row.
Yeah, but the Packers also scored 52 weeks. The Eagles gave up 50. Come on. I like the Bears here pretty easily. Luke McClown isn't coming back and beating this team. It's terrible in Tampa. It's just, yeah, no, thank you. Give me the Bears.
And Cutler really should shred that Tampa too, which has been just god-awful this year, right? And yet, it was another game that was close enough that I didn't know who I wanted. I was considering Tampa straight up to win going into the week. The plus-minus is a little illuminating, but also a little misleading. Tampa is -85 on the year.
It's also very sad.
Yeah. Tampa -85 on the year at 2-8. The Bears are 4-6, but they're -75. Now, I could look at that a couple of different ways. I could say, well, the Bears, you know, just ran into Aaron Rodgers a couple of different times, and they've given up 50 the last 2 weeks. That's really skewing them. But I could also look at it as you're 4-6, and yet you're -75, and you're only two games under .500. That sucks. So all of that is to say, I'm going to go ahead and take Tampa with the points, but not necessarily to win the game. I think they'll keep it close.
Okay. I knew you would.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty easy to guess which way I was going on that one, I suppose.
You're hating on the Bears a lot this year.
They're giving me reason to hate on them, believe me. The 4-6 St. Louis Rams coming off their
I'm sorry, before you go on with that, I was talking to my dad this week. You know, my dad's a big Bears fan, but he lives in Atlanta. And I'm an Atlanta fan. So I'm talking to my dad, and you know, he's talking to me about the Cubs. I said, oh, what's the matter? Don't you want to talk about football? Since, you know, both of our teams are 4-6, but only one of them gets to be in first place.
You've been wearing that out all week?
Oh, yeah. First place, because it's so stupid. Not because I'm proud of it.
You were so gung-ho before the show started to do the Atlanta Falcons as a highlight game because it's the first place Atlanta Falcons. I understand it's subversive and something to laugh at, but...
Yes. Because I also predicted it, too. 2 weeks ago, I predicted it.
Yes. Yes, you did. So who's winning the division, Mr. Prediction?
Oh, God. I believe I picked the Falcons before the season started to win the division.
Oh, my God. Are
you
sticking with that after watching them?
Good. Hey, week 12, they're in first place. Come on.
Oh, my God. Anyway, moving along to the St. Louis Rams at 4-6. Coming off that big win last week over the Broncos, they are 5-point dogs at the 6-4, but kind of struggling San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, this is the funny one because San Diego, they couldn't cover the number against Oakland, and then you've got St. Louis. They beat Denver in convincing fashion. You'd think they're like two ships passing in the night, you know. No, I'm going to take San Diego here. I do not believe in the St. Louis Rams. I'm sorry. On the road at San Diego, I'm going with the better team. Yes, they're paper champions, but the Chargers are still the better team.
I don't necessarily want to believe in the Rams either, but look, I got to trust what my eyes are looking at. My eyes are looking at the San Diego Chargers, as you aptly named them, paper champions. They're not very good. And Phillip Rivers is hurt. And the St. Louis D-line is just romping. And the Chargers are slumping overall as a team. And the Rams have beaten Seattle, San Francisco, and Denver this season. I got the Rams to win. I'm sorry. The Chargers just look like they are dropping like a ton of bricks. And I don't know where the Rams are on their way to. I'm not saying that they're just about to take off and be this huge wild card threat to threaten the NFC, but I got to trust what my eyes are telling me right now, and my eyes are telling me that the Chargers are not to be trusted at this point in time. Not until they once again show what they're capable of as they were showing at the beginning of the year, because they don't look like the same team at all. The Washington Redskins, poor Tim's Redskins at 3-7, the drama-filled Redskins with RG3. They are plus 8.5 at the 6-4 San Francisco 49ers.
I'm going to take those points. As bad as the Redskins are, is how little impressed I have been with the San Francisco 49ers. That something's happening. The message isn't getting through. They're checking out. I know they're not quite a mail-it-in team, but there is something. You know, you talk about you go with what you see. What I see from San Francisco is a not very good football team. I don't know if they're capable of covering this big of a number against anybody. They're not very good. So I like the Redskins to go in there, stir up the pot a little bit, you know, get the running game going. Maybe RG3 starts to figure this out a little bit. I have no trust in the 49ers. I need to see it before I believe it. I'm taking the Redskins.
Yeah, the eyes also tell me that San Fran is not nearly what people thought that they were going to be. You know, my eyes are also telling me, good God, the Redskins are a mess. They're just from coaching all on the way down. That whole organization just seems to be a shitstorm, almost as bad as the fucking Bears. I'm going to take San Fran, and I'm going to give the 8.5. You know, the running game getting started for Washington, I think that actually is not going to happen, and the reason is because apparently there's been a new star born right under our noses for San Francisco, and his name is Chris Borland. He's the linebacker that took over for Patrick Willis when he had his season-ending injury, and Chris Borland has been killing it. I don't know who he is. I don't know where he came from, but he has
Wisconsin.
Been... Wisconsin. Ah, well...
Wisconsin.
Well, you would know that being up there in that very state.
Yes.
Yeah, he's been a monster. And San Fran's really needed him as well. And I think almost all by himself, he is really keeping San Fran around and keeping him relevant in the NFC the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to trust him to hold down the Redskins offense, which I don't think is all that hard because no one seems to be on the same fucking page on that team. So I think it's going to be quite easy for San Fran to suffocate the Redskins. We have three night games left on the docket instead of two, huh? How's that work? Well, if you've been under a rock, you'll find that out in a pick or so. But first we'll get to the Sunday night affair. NFC East action. We just love seeing the NFC East on primetime. We don't see enough of that.
Oh, especially on
division.
Sunday night football.
Yeah, we never see them. It's weird. Anyway, the 7-3 Dallas Cowboys are on the road. They're back from their trip to London and back from their bye, and they are 3.5 point favorites, 3.5 point favorites at the 3-7 New York Giants.
The Giants are junk. I'm sorry. I've tried to ride with these guys. They had that game gift-wrapped for them last week against San Francisco to at least cover the number, and Eli Manning proceeds to throw 5 picks in a game where San Francisco wasn't really doing much of anything. Eli Manning threw 5 picks, and the 49ers managed a whole whopping, 16 points or some 20? Some ridiculously low number, given as crappy that the Giants played. Cowboys are going to go in there and roll these guys up. I don't even think it's going to be close. Cowboys squish.
Believe it or not, I consider the Giants at the beginning of this week because it would be one of those weird division deals.
Yeah.
And the plus minus straightened me out and got me off of that. Dallas is plus 49. The Giants are minus 58. That makes sense considering their records. Yeah, I'm just going to do the sensible thing and take the Cowboys to cover that number. And also, this is DeMarco Murray off a bye against the defense that just gave up 6 trillion yards on the ground to the Seattle Seahawks. Uh-oh. I think that's going to be trouble.
And Dallas has got the best O-line in the league, by the way. So, yeah, it's going to be ugly.
They've been mauling. The Buffalo Bills can't play at home at Buffalo because they're under a million pounds of snow. They are going to host the Jets in Detroit, Michigan. So I don't know what you want to consider a road game, a home game, or whatever, but the Jets are plus 2.5 against the Bills.
Yeah, well, ironically, I had the Jets, if this game was going to be in Buffalo, when it was a 4-point spread. Then they move it to a neutral site, take a little bit away from the Bills. Well, I don't think the Bills are going to play better. I like the Jets here. I think the Bills have kind of had their run here with the Ortman. And the Jets kind of showed me something. They actually stood up and accounted for themselves. Even if they're bad, Rex Ryan gets those guys ready to play. They might play bad because they're not a good team, but they're always ready. I think they'll be ready for prime time in Detroit, and I like the Jets here.
I'm sorry. I don't care if it's in Detroit or Buffalo or where. The Jets are 0-4 on the road this year, whether it's in Detroit, Buffalo, Siberia, or anywhere else. The Jets are minus 91 on the season. Buffalo's minus 4. Yeah, I considered the Jets until I saw that as well. I'm taking the Buffalo Bills. And the real Monday Night Football game takes place in the Superdome. The 4-6 New Orleans Saints, the good old 3-point home favorite against the 6-4 Baltimore Ravens.
And I am going to go with the home team here and take those cop-out points, or give the cop-out points, I should say. I like the Saints here because, once again, they Jekyll and Hyde, they look great against the Packers, then they just cannot win a game, then they start losing games at home, they got Cincinnati come in there and beat them. You just don't know what you're going to get from these guys. So what's the point in trying to pick a Saints game? probably be a push. It's probably smelling pushier than any pick we've had for a while. I'm just going to take the Saints. What? Why not?
I pretty much agree all the way. I'm taking the Saints because what the hell? You know, Baltimore secondary is beat up. New Orleans wide receivers are beat up. Who's going to prevail? Guess I'll go with Drew Brees and the Saints at home. Everyone's saying Drew Brees is falling off. They're still third in the league in passing offense, so I think the Saints may pull it out here. More in our after show after the music. Now into our VIP after show portion of the program. Once again, pushing it right to the wire, but we get them all in.
Well, it's the way we do it. It's our move.
It is.
Yeah, I'm watching the clock. I got the little clock here up on the corner of the computer. We're always right on. We always leave ourselves about a minute for that last pick. That Monday night game gets about a minute every week, unless the Monday night game is a highlight game.
Right.
It's okay. I mean, we got all the points across. It wasn't like that was a particularly sexy game that we had to talk about in much detail anyways.
Yeah, there's not much detail to talk about.
I'm not all that exciting about Baltimore and New Orleans because I don't have a handle on either one of those teams.
Right. Yeah, there's not much you can really get into. If Joe Flacco performs elite, then Baltimore will probably take it, but if he doesn't, then New Orleans should take it, and that's pretty much what every Baltimore game comes down to.
Yeah, and if they both play great, it'll be a fun game to watch.
Yeah. I hope New Orleans makes it fun to watch, because their last couple of games at home have not been fun.
No. And, yeah, God, I mean, you could once again, you could have both the Falcons and the Saints lose here. And you'd have a 4-7 first place team. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh God! New Orleans dropped three home games in a row for the first time in God knows when. So
there's a realistic pathway. It's not a high ability that you could have a 5-11 winner in that division if everything went the right way. It could happen.
Go ahead and predict that one then.
No. No, considering directly, we would have a 9-9 champion before it ever happened. And then it never happened in history. It's not looking good for one of these teams to crack 500, though.
I have to download the Twilight Zone music to play when you go into alien mode like you do, because this is just crazy. Just right on time, right as soon as the show ends, you go into that alien voice thing, and I know there's nothing you can do about it, but it's just it alternates between funny and like scary because what the hell? It's like what is going on there?
Well, and it always seems to. Is it still going on?
Yeah, but it's gonna fade out eventually.
Okay, because it always seems to happen about the same amount of time after the show is over. So this has got to be one of those little audio nuances of like the site or something like that. Maybe it's switching something over because it's always in that minute or 2 minutes right after the show ends and switches into the after show.
It's always on your end.
Yeah.
And it's always when you're on the Skype. That doesn't happen when you're on the phone line.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you what's happening.
Yeah. Some crazy tech guy can, I'm sure, but I don't know that crazy tech guy, so we just have to deal with it, I guess.
Really what it is I'm sitting here hitting the sound like an alien button. It's like the super secret turbo button.
Yeah, I knew you were going
have
to
you
go
ever,
there.
Have you ever told the story of the super secret turbo button?
Is there one specific story to it, or is it just every time we played? That's what I accuse you of doing.
I believe every time we ever played Madden, you accused me of having the super secret turbo button.
There would be just moves that you would make with your guy in the open field that I couldn't catch you. And it's like, I want to go that fast, but I can't. I don't know how. And then when I try to make those same moves, you just hit me from the side and knock the ball out. And it's like, okay, really? What the hell? Yes. So, yeah, I started accusing you of having some super secret turbo button that made your guys go much faster, when in reality it was just that your favorite team was the Falcons, so most of the time you were using the Falcons and Michael Vick, who was faster than everybody on the game.
Yeah, that helps too. That helps too. Yeah, when you're running for 80-yard touchdowns with your quarterback, that's not
it's not fair is what it is.
It's not fair. I understand. But, no, yeah, that was – we have a long history of woe in video game history. That could be like a whole segment of shows.
Oh, go ahead and tell the Gopher 2 story.
Oh, well, do people even know that Gopher is your nickname?
Among a few people.
Among a select group of friends, although on my phone, when you call me, it says Gopher.
It says Gopher.
It says Gopher, but it's not G-O-P-H-E-R like the animal. It's G-O-F-E-R, which is a reference to Gopher 2, which is also in itself a reference to Dave Wannstedt. For when he decided in a game against the Packers to go for two to get the lead, because he was the explanation was that he didn't want Brett Favre to get the ball or something silly like that, even though it didn't matter if you kicked the extra point. He was going to get the ball.
If you're wondering why Dave Wannstedt isn't an NFL coach anymore, folks.
So, yeah, sort of the go for two. Well, here we are. I believe it's New Year's Eve,
yep.
Right? Party at my house, New Year's Eve. We're sitting in the living room playing. It wasn't Madden. We were actually playing the one of the early incarnations of the NFL 2K franchise.
Okay.
And you and I are playing. I'm killing you for the whole game. You come back and you score the potential game-tying touchdown with no time left. The game is over. So we're going to overtime. All you have to do is kick the extra point, and we're going to overtime. So you're sitting there, and I've got my buddies behind me chanting, go for two, go for two, go for two, go for two. So here you go. You line up for the extra point, and it's a fake.
Mm-hmm.
You throw the ball out into the flat, your snapper. Threw the ball, threw a little pass out into the flat. Your guy is wide open. There's nobody in the area. You were almost doing the home run thing like you did to me that one time, where you thought you had the game-winning home run against me in a game of baseball, and you put the controller down and you start like genuflecting in the room, you know, just like. We were waiting for the Angels to start singing until my guy jumped over the wall and caught the ball and brought it back.
Yep.
And that was the last thing you were expecting to hear was, out! And you're just like, what? Yeah. So your guy's just waltzing into the end zone. This game is over. You're going to win. And then all of a sudden my guy just pulls a Mike Jones on you in the Super Bowl and just shows up out of nowhere and tackles your guy.
At the one-centimeter line.
And it was funny because we went back and had to watch the replay because you were for sure thought the ball crossed the goal line. Like, oh, no, I got robbed, right?
Yeah.
And we go back, and my guy's got you wrapped up, and I can still see the animation of the guy, like, arms and legs flailing up in the air and the ball, like, spinning in the guy's hand. And you looked right down the goal line, and the ball, the tip of the ball, missed the goal line. I mean, if it was a hair, it was a lot. It just missed, and my guy tackles you, and you lose the game. And you weren't very happy about it. I am, you know, the rumor or the history of this is that you contend that you weren't upset, but you were not happy about it. We'll just go with that. And, you kind of, like, give the, like, stare of death to the guys who were all chanting for you to go for two, who were calling you basically, like, hey, what are you doing? Why'd you do that?
Well, it's the one specific guy that makes the story that I was
yes.
staring at.
Yes, so you're given our friend Bill, who's also in our baseball league with us, the stare down, and he's like, "Why'd you listen to us? We're drunk." You know, we're all drinking. And
no, here's
so
the,
ever
the way that the way the
then,
actual quote went was a little funnier. I thought the way the actual quote goes was, they're chanting "Go for two." I did the fake and missed.
Yeah,
and Bill immediately stands up and goes, "Why'd you go for two?" And I turned and looked at him and said, "Because all you guys told me to go for two." And his response was, "Well, we're drunk."
I mean, just, and so forever in that group of people who were there witnessing that, you have always been go for two or gopher.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my favorite follow-up to that story was that, you know, we're years later, I had moved out of Chicago. I'm back in town. You're still in Chicago, and Bill, of course, lives in Chicago. So the three of us are in my car, and we're driving somewhere, and you're telling us some of your dating stories. And it's about you and your buddy, and you guys are in this hotel room, and there's these two girls, and you guys think you're going to score, and nothing ends up happening. And then Bill, in the back seat, just all of a sudden goes, "I guess we should call you 0 for 2 now." And that, and I've always remembered that out of the... I believe that's the first time somebody else got that on our show.
He deserved it for that one. As
he
angry
did.
As I was for when
yes.
he said that, he deserved that, because that was just the perfect line at the perfect time. Which
so
he's got
it
a
was
knack
hard
for doing.
For you to, so it was hard for you to stay upset about it, because it was, it wasn't like even a pause between you telling the story, and then just that comes out right out of the silence, just like boom. So how can you be mad about a perfectly timed put down?
Oh,
like
that was it. That was, he hit the walk off home run on that one. That was beautiful.
So yeah, so gopher two or gopher for short has always, so among a group of about five friends, has always kind of been your nickname. And yes, on my phone when you call me, it says gopher.
I am absolutely not ever on this show going to tell the story of that evening, why I got the overseas line.
I tried,
but I'm
to
so
give the
tempted
Cliff Notes
to do
version
so.
Of it. That was, yeah. That story was excruciating.
Oh my god!
Because
that,
it
that
was
night
just...
was excruciating. Believe me, if you think it's excruciating, imagine how I felt.
Yeah, I didn't live it.
Yeah.
That, so. Yeah, that's funny that, you know, it's like, yeah. Yeah, the other story that I alluded to was you and I playing the MLB game, the baseball game, and I'm the Brewers, I believe. We just randomly picked teams, and I forget who you were. And yeah,
I don't remember which team I was, but which way does Craig Paquette play a role in? Was that my guy that hit
the
jack?
Oh, were you the Tigers? Yeah, you must have been the Tigers.
Was that the one that hit it, or was, I didn't know if that was me who hit it, or was it Craig Paquette for your team that robbed me?
No, it was Jim Edmonds.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Of course it was Jim Edmonds.
So I'm the Brewers, and you're the Tigers, and we're playing, and it's the bottom of the ninth, and you crushed it, and you put the controller down, and the hands go out. Just,
it was dead
like,
center.
I did it. This thing's over. You're not even looking at the TV.
No.
And all of a sudden, you look at the TV, and you didn't win the game.
What happened?
And you even went, this is another one, you had to go back and look at the replay.
Because I didn't see what happened.
Because you didn't see what happened. All you know is, wait, how'd I lose? I hit the
you
game.
You mean I lost?
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell is this? I won the game. So yeah, a lot of times, it's funny when I was actually when I lived with you.
Oh god,
we hardly played any video games against each other.
Right, but reason for that was because I was on this OCD kick.
Yes,
where I had to play all of my seasons, all of my full seasons. at specific times. That didn't leave me any time to play socially with you because I was in the midst of a 162-game baseball season, an 82-game NBA season, and I didn't do football only because when you moved in after January, my football season had just ended, or else I'd have been doing that too.
So, yeah, so I actually, we always joke about it, but we actually became, like, attached to these made-up players in these video games.
So much so that we remember their names.
That we remember the names of the made-up guys and how they contributed to the team. And the other fun part of that, and it still holds for us now, is we made up nicknames for players in the video game that we then attached to that player in real life.
Like Press.
Like Press. So if we ever talk about Press, that's Miguel Cabrera. Now you'd be like, well, what do you mean, Miguel Cabrera? You were playing as the White Sox. You trade for Miguel Cabrera, who's this stud player, but you're trying so hard with him.
Every time I got him up to bat, I was trying to hit a 700-foot home run.
So you,
because
you know,
his
so
power
you,
rating was so killer that I was just trying to crush every, and I was just striking out and missing wildly, not even coming close, because they weren't putting him anywhere near the plate because his power number was so huge that they were just staying away from him. And I was just trying to hit everything, and so I was pressing. I was pressing with Miguel Cabrera, and so his nickname became Press. Not because of him, but because of what I was doing with him.
Right, not because of the actual Miguel Cabrera. Because of Miguel Cabrera in a video game, we now call him Press. Right. And it was said in a way like for you being a White Sox fan of Hawk Harrelson. So it would always be like, come on, Press,
Here comes Press.
Yeah. So it stuck. So it's even to the
pond,
point now.
Here comes Press.
Which is funny because when I write out my sheets for the baseball league, and I write the rosters down and everybody keeps their players, anytime Miguel Cabrera gets kept, it just says Press. And I know exactly who it is.
Like most people write King for Felix Hernandez because it is nickname.
I write King. King. I actually write that for Felix Hernandez. I know who it is. It's King.
Right.
Yeah, but we actually had, and then your basketball team, we had nicknames. We had Spark. Who was Spark, by the way?
Was it Othella Harrington?
That was, because every time you brought him into the game, he provided a spark off the bench. So his nickname actually became Spark.
Spark. I don't know what it was about him, the fact that he was left-handed or what have you, but teams couldn't seem to guard him for some reason. So, he was instant offense. He was Spark.
But I have to say, of all the games I had to sit there and watch you play, nothing was more excruciating than your playoff NBA series where I didn't even talk to you when it was over. Again, was it the Miami Heat?
No, it was the Orlando Magic.
You're playing as the Bulls. You're number one seed, and you get to play the number eight seed, Orlando Magic, and you're going to sweep these guys out of the playoffs, and they swept you.
Yeah.
And you didn't win a
game.
Not
only did they sweep me, but
there
was a different player that was player of the game in all four games.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how they got that damn good between the regular season and the playoffs, but they just took it to another level. And one game, Hito Turkoglu just murdered me. The next game, Stevie Francis went off and killed me. The next game, Lamar Odom went off on me. And the fourth game, I don't even remember who the fuck. But
yeah
it was a different player was the player of the game in every single one of their games. And the Orlando Magic swept me as a number one seed. So I went through 82 games of this shit to build my team up as good as it was, whatever record I had, probably in the 60-win neighborhood, somewhere in that range. And Orlando was like, I want to say they were like a game under 500 or something like that. And I'm like, I'm going to beat the fuck out of these guys. And you saw how hard I was trying to win those games. You saw the physical excruciating effort I was putting into that controller trying to fucking get one win in that series. I could not beat them once.
I talked.
I, I,
we, I talked to you less and less and less as that series progressed. Not in general, but as you were playing the games, because it was, because that level of frustration was growing and growing and growing. And after you lost, it was just, it was tough.
I understand. I understand why you didn't talk to me.
I was sitting at the computer, you know, so people don't understand the layout. Your computer was in the living room, and you kind of looked over the computer to where you were sitting and playing your game, and I couldn't even watch. I could just hear. Fuck! Motherfucker! Ah!
Yeah.
And after a while, though, it stopped even being like that. It just started becoming like, oh.
Just dejected sighs,
yeah,
and just, resigned to the
just
fate.
Knew. You just knew. But yeah, that was always interesting. You know, I remember I'd be sitting on the couch. I'd fall asleep sitting up watching you play, you know, baseball.
Well,
all of a sudden, that was fun too.
Yeah, because not only is it boring as hell to watch another person play a nine-inning game of baseball, but I was coming back from work. And I had my job was second shift at the time, so I'm coming home at like 11 o'clock at night. But because I'm so fucking OCD, I have to play my game before I go to bed. So you're sitting up there at 11, 11:30, close to midnight, you know, trying to support me and rooting me on. But I'm sure in your mind thinking, God, will this guy go to bed so I can go to bed because I don't want to be sitting up here.
Yeah, and I would just right in the middle and just...
Right, I would... You'd say one, like, compliment to me, like, all right, way to go, Eli Fortner, or whatever the made-up Bulls guy was.
Oh,
was
man.
A fan of.
Or whoever it was on the baseball team, you know, or the stupid little, you know, the stupid sounds that the game would make, like every, like, the spee, you know, for the strike. You know, I still watch baseball, and if there's a strike, I still say that. Spee!
Yeah, with the finger point. Yep, I
guess
I see you now. Yeah.
Yeah, they still do this shit like that. So it's, like, amazing, and I don't know how many people we're connecting with on this one, but how video games can impact your experience of watching the real game.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Or the other way around. Like, if you think a player is shit in real life, you're not going to want him on your baseball. I remember the first year I was going into the American League, in the Ad Hack League, and from my experiences, this is funny, if my experiences of playing hardball, I knew that Sidney Ponson was a piece of shit. Oh, not hardball, it was high heat baseball. On the computer. I was playing high heat baseball, and all I knew is every time I played against Sidney Ponson, I lit him up. I knew from the video game that I did not want him ever on my real fantasy team. That was a good call, by the way, because he was a piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
So
but
I
it's
knew
funny
from
how
the
that
video
works.
Game that he was garbage before I ever even saw
works.
A pitch.
Because my MVP 04 or whatever I was playing, Sidney Ponson dominated me every time I faced him because they outfitted him with a 96-mile-an-hour two-seamer, and he was a bitch. He threw a couple of shutouts against me. He was no fun for me. But the problem is, in real life, he couldn't control that shit. He would throw that ball, like, all over the place, behind batters and everywhere else, and then when he finally got some control of a ball, he would just groove it right over the middle and would get killed. So,
yeah, my favorite player in the High Heat series was always Mike Piazza.
Oh,
because
fun,
every,
I'm sure.
No, because when he caught, you could run on
oh,
him. Like,
defensively, oh my God.
Every single throw of his second base three hopped.
Yes. Fun,
like,
fun
the ball
as hell on offense.
To second base. I'd have pitchers stealing off of him. Not just stealing, like straight stealing. Like no lead. The slowest guy on the team is like into second standing up because every throw of his from was either, first of all, it was either a three hop. Or it was sailed into the outfield.
Yeah, I was about to say,
they
way
must have thought,
the bag, yeah.
They must have thought that Mike Piazza was, like, the worst defensive catcher of all time. I mean, he was bad, but he threw a guy out every once in a while. In high heat baseball, never. Your guy could break both his legs on the way to second base and crawl the rest of the way and still be safe.
How many bags did you steal off of him in one game?
I never counted in that one, though. My favorite was in the World Series of the MVP baseball season that I finished up, where I actually played all 162 games. I had 11 steals in one game off of Tim Wakefield.
Oh. Yeah, I knew it was some game where you had 11 steals in a game. And I'm like,
it wasn't because of the catcher. It was because it was Wakefield and that knuckleball.
Plus, and that's weird.
Yeah.
Because in my MVP game, Tim Wakefield threw his knuckler maybe once every three pitches. So I couldn't do that.
Well, you also know how I construct my baseball teams in, like, video game world. Every guy is fast.
Right. You
so
love
my slow
speed.
Players are fast. So I trade for speed. I draft speed.
You're the original Kansas City Royals.
I was because power was one thing, but yeah, the guy who steals second and third, invaluable.
Yeah, can't argue with that. I was going for the power. I was trying to get all the highest power bats in my lineup. I wanted 1 through 9 to be able to jack one. So
you wanted the Earl Weaver team.
Yeah, exactly. Team speed, for Christ's sake. You get these fucking little fleas out there. Yeah, I wanted the power bangers. That's what I was looking for. I'll take a flea at the leadoff spot, maybe like Sean Figgins or something. After that, I want bangers. But fuck that shit. You know?
Oh, man, that was a little video game trip down memory lane.
Yeah. Been a long time since I've been that crazy that I had to play all 82 of a basketball or 162 of a baseball. I'm definitely not nearly as bad about that as I used to be.
Yeah, but you forgot the most important part. You didn't just play the schedule. You played the schedule on the appropriate days in the schedule.
Yes, if there was a day off, then I didn't play because it's my day off.
Yeah, you played on the calendar day.
Oh, it got worse than that. I also played at the time of day of the game. If it was a day game, I had to play it when the sun was up, because otherwise I couldn't do it. If that meant getting up early before I went to work or went to school or what have you, then I got it out of the way during the daytime because it had to be a day game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it used to be that bad. Mm-hmm.
They have medicine for that.
Yeah, well.
No, I'm just saying.
I got the best medicine I could get. I found a good woman, and now I give all my attention to her, so I don't have to do that anymore.
So does that mean you're done? You don't play you're not doing the seasons anymore? I mean, are you retired?
I guess I am. I still do my Madden. I can't explain what it is behind the Madden thing, but I'm still playing the franchise version of Madden 2003 because there's just something about the way I've worked so hard in the off season to scout all the players and draft the ones I wanted and build that team up. It's won the last two Super Bowls in a row, and I can't let it go. I'm sorry, I can't let that team go. I still play once a week. It's not on Sunday because I work Sundays, but during my off days during the week, I still play, and I'm still rallying my team towards the playoffs. My starting quarterback just got hurt this last game that I played. Partially torn ACL. He's out for the next 5 weeks. So I got to just keep on trucking with my backups, you know. But
is that the great Baron Armstrong still?
It is.
See, I even know the name. I know the made-up guy who's taking your team to multiple Super Bowls, the great Baron Armstrong.
Okay, we've weirded out everybody that listens to our show at this point, so let's get out of here.
Well, I still say I'm going to someday send you the Bulls 1 jersey that says Fortner. And see if you wear that around. My favorite made-up guy on your Bulls roster was this just random white dude, Eli Fortner, who he was just bad. I think that's why we liked him. But you'd give him a few shots every game just for, like, shits and giggles. And, he'd hit him. He could hit the three ball once in a while. We just broke down the game of a made-up dude. Oh, no.
Yes. It used to be that bad, folks, I'm telling you. It really did. Yeah, I couldn't play him all the time because he was so bad on defense. He would just get abused. So I basically only put him in like, garbage time, and Jason would actually get excited and perk up on the couch when I put him in because that was this guy.
Fortner.
It was start chanting for him, and I'd run a couple of sets for him and get him open for a three. Yeah. And yeah, because he could stroke a three every now and then, but yeah, I couldn't leave him in too long because he would just get dunked on. He would be wearing black nuts on his head all game long. It was not pretty. So, but that was your guy. You loved you some Eli Fortner. But yeah, all those games are just sitting in the cabinet right now. But I do not pull them out. I don't have the need to. And I'm sort of afraid if I did pull them out, I might get like sucked back in or something and have to start all over again. But
you're like the Godfather. Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
They pull me right back in. Yeah. But yeah, it used to be pretty bad. But what can I say? So we're going to bid you a good night now here at 11 Central Time, and that's midnight on the East Coast. We are on blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. That's our live page site. That's also where our archive is located. Or you can get on iTunes if you have an iPad or iPod or iPhone and subscribe to our show on iTunes. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. The reason I mention that is because I have a friend at work who, I don't know how she came across an iPod, but like her husband came across a used iPod. I think literally someone lost it or he found it in the street. It's not her iPod, but she now owns an iPod. She didn't own an iPod before like this week, before a few days ago. And she was trying to ask me about how to go on iTunes and download podcasts and stuff because I'm always laughing at the different sports podcasts that I listen to. And she's like, I want to listen to the stuff you listen to because you always laughing. So I was just telling her to go on her computer and download iTunes on your computer, and then you can go in there and listen to the free podcast and get music and all of that good stuff. And she just came back today, and she was mad at me because she didn't know she had to pay money for the music. She thought she was just going to go on there like in the Napster days or something and just take whatever song she wanted for free and put it on her iPod. I said, no, it doesn't work that way anymore. It used to work that way in the Napster days, but those days are long gone. You have to pay for the songs that you want unless you find some other free file-sharing website out there that the government hasn't shut down yet. But in any event, podcasts are free. I've only come across a handful of podcasts that ask you to pay for their content, and that's a no-go. That's a non-starter for me, personally. But yeah, just subscribe on iTunes to our show. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. It is completely free, at least for now. I'm on Twitter at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. And you can always email the show, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com is where you would send that. And the picks will be up on the blog in the next, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes or so. And that blog site is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. So unless Jason has anything else to add.
Nope, I'm good. I'm still stunned about all the years of the video game playing and stuff and just like, wow.
Yeah.
We can tell more stories. That's what's so sad.
Oh, yeah. I know. We definitely did not go with every story that we've had from back in the day. But we'll save those for some other time. He is Jay. I am Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Enjoy your football on Sunday, and we will see you for our recap show of Week 12 next Tuesday evening at 9 p.m. Central. See you then.